There's nothing wrong with a small, healthy, profitable company.
Say it again.
There is nothing wrong with a small, healthy, and profitable company.
We've got an incredible new partner, PrintProfit.com. You may have heard of Print Profit. We had Nick on, the founder, before, and he's coming up again. But PrintProfit.com, you already print shirts. Now it's time to print profit. Print Profit is a profitable software built for print shops, profitability software for print shops. You can think of it like a business co-pilot that connects to your Printavo and QuickBooks to show you in real time exactly where you stand and where to go next. Run your shop with confidence, knowing exactly where to focus on to close better deals, increase margins, and grow profitably every day. You can schedule a one-on-one print profit audit at printprofit.com. I just want to also say that this platform is really, really powerful. I've heard a lot of positive feedback from shops who are using it at printprofit.com to be able to see the profitability of their business in real time and not wait to the end of the month to see what cash is left over in the bank. Check it out, printprofit.com.
Sweet. And I think we're going to have Nick on shortly in a future episode. Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? Of course you have. If you go to Instagram right now, search Multicraft underscore daddy, you will find Dave Eggers from Multicraft. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years have been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo pod, you'll receive an extra 10% off your order. And Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape on every episode. If you haven't ordered from Dave yet, shoot him a message, Multicraft underscore daddy. He raffles it off every single week, and we're so appreciative for his sponsorship, and his videos are pretty funny. Keep doing them, Dave. All right, who we got next?
Easy Way. Steven, I know you're spending hours cleaning screens. Guess what? That's a thing of the past, because Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals get the job done. They've got innovative formulas that are designed to work quickly and effectively, so you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Ding! I need that little like gum commercial sparkle from the teeth. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. They offer helpful resources and expert advice to help you succeed in printing. GraphxSource.com. You know that if you mention Printavo Pod 24, that gets you 50% off their services. And what are their services? Separations, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, customer service. They've been at it for 40 plus years in the game, and they plug into Printavo. They plug into any shop management tool that you have to be able to help manage this, all that stuff. I know Campus Ink heavily uses them for a lot of the seps and digitizing and mockups. And so they've got a bunch of artists that are plugging and playing into Campus Ink's Printavo account. So check them out, graphxsource.com. All right, let's jump into the episode. I had a bowl of cereal earlier today. It was the last time you guys had cereal? Oh, this is a little bit healthier. I had Kashi. It's like so it's some a healthy sort of protein something. It's not Frosted Flakes. It should have been Frosted Flakes.
How was it?
It was amazing. It was so good. It makes me wonder why not I can't have that more.
When's the last time you had kids cereal like Cap'n Crunch?
I can't remember.
Been too long. I need to go get some, like a Cinnamon Toast Crunch or something like that. Yeah.
Fruit Loops.
What was your favorite kids cereal?
I mean, you know, Captain Crunch, sure. I mean, that's awesome. Fruit Loops. You know, there's Snoop Loops. You've heard of that, right?
Is that Snoop Dogs?
Snoop, yeah, he has his own cereal.
The man who has everything. It's crazy. He has his own wine. Have you been into one of the like liquor stores and he's got some sort of Snoop Dogg wine? I didn't try it.
Is it a nice cab, maybe?
Yeah. Very nice cab. Andy Rudman.
Gentlemen, hey, thank you. It's been a while since I've done one of these. How does this work? So I guess I'm answering the questions, or I ask the questions. Which do you do?
No. I actually wrote down a ton of questions that I'd been thinking about over the last month, and I hit you up, I think yesterday, saying, hey, I've got a lot of questions. Are you free tomorrow? Can we ask you these? And we went back and forth. you know, we massage some of these questions, and I think we've got a good list.
You massaged them or messaged them? Which is the
a combo.
Did you do
a combo?
Oh.
How's the shop been?
Shop's great. You know, this year it feels really good. I don't know. I think it's a combination of strategy and luck, you know? So, I mean, we're having a record year and super grateful for it.
And Andy, your back is now good enough where you can hop on press and go back to playing a little bit.
So that's like, what you said you know, were doing. Was it this past weekend or was it Memorial Day or is it?
No. No, I mean, maybe I should have, but I wasn't this weekend, but you know, we got busy and our team is different. It's a little smaller now. We have somebody starting tomorrow, or two people actually starting tomorrow, which is going to really help. But I got pulled into production and, you know, before these past couple of years or whatever, that was just a fantasy to actually go stand at a press and offload shirts or even load shirts. And now I can do it. So, I mean, I am. Feels good. I'm back.
My back. Why is the team smaller? Like purposefully, or is just how things have?
I think just how it ended up. Some people have left and we didn't add back and we've become more efficient in certain ways. And so, so we've added a couple, but they, you know how that is. Sometimes it takes a while and they had to finish school and they're finishing. And so that's happening tomorrow. So yeah, we're ready for it. That's for sure. I wanted to figure out how to get them in here today, but you know, when it's, you have a holiday week and you're trying to cram, it seems like 5 days into four, you know what that's like. So it's one of those days.
Isn't it funny how when you kind of reduce a team, they can still get the same amount of work done and find a way to figure it out?
It's interesting. Beautiful.
What's that law? Parkinson's law or whatever. Law. What is that again, Bruce? You explain it really well. What did you say?
I mean, the time that you need to complete something takes as long as the time you give it. Like the capacity you allow for it, it just naturally fills it up. And they say it about money. They say it about, that's why like profit first is awesome, because it's the same thing, right? Like whatever the profits that you do generate, you tend to want to reinvest it or allocate it somewhere. And then, you know, he's trying to break that habit, but yeah, pretty crazy, like psychological thing.
Okay. So Andy, we have questions we're going to ask you, but before we jump into that, Bruce, I want to pick on you for like 2 minutes because you did something really cool like 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. You went on your first backpacking trip for like 3 days off the grid.
Oh yeah. True. I forgot about that.
Can we talk about this for a second? Outdoor Bruce. I don't know where you came from. I don't know who this person is, but you did tell us about what you did in the wilderness. Cause I think listeners will be mildly entertained and then Andy and I can critique and,
yeah, there's no business aspects here. It's just more of a fun aspect, but I have to give credit to my wife for always wanting to do these crazy, goofy, weird, unique things or experiences. But she sent this thing called Havasupai Falls and like, hey, we should do this. And, you know, I'm just like, yeah, sure. Sounds good. Not really researching it until a week before and realizing that it's in the Grand Canyon. You have to hike 10 miles down into the Grand Canyon. You have to bring all of your things that you're going to have to stay there. You could stay up to 3 nights. We stayed 2 nights there. And then once you are there, you want to hike around to the waterfalls, which are really cool. But some of the hikes to get there are just basically straight vertical, like wet rock, you know, a little bit difficult and or very far. And then you have to carry everything, including your trash, out. So all the stuff that you brought, the food, tent, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I guess this is the definition of backpacking, but this is a new concept to me. And 10 miles back out, up to the top of the Grand Canyon again, okay? And so the 10 down, not too bad. I mean, I overpacked a little bit, But I bought all the stuff. I had a tent. I asked people a lot of different questions. I think the bag was maybe 45 or so pounds. We made it there. Beautiful, like, scenery. These waterfalls are absolutely incredible. It's the Havasu Native American tribe that literally lives down in there. It's kind of goofy too, because they don't have good internet and stuff, but they've got Starlink, which allowed them to have, you know, be able to make cell phone calls and have schools and things like that. Anyway, enjoyed that hike 10 miles around on the second day. And then the third day, we hiked 10 miles back out. And the last mile and a half was incredibly difficult with the backpack and everything. I would say probably the most physically difficult thing I've ever done, bringing that all the way back up. But it felt like such an accomplishment to be able to do. It was awesome after. I'll have to just text you guys some photos or pop something up here on the screen. But yeah, unbelievable. I recommend do it at least once.
Have you ever done that? Like wilderness, 3 days, 4 days? Like,
well, yes, but not 10-mile hike in and out, you know, drive to a campsite and then drive out. So how long is that, a half day, 10-mile back, you know, trek back up?
We did it in about 4 hours, but we were kind of moving quickly. I think most people can do it in 4 to 5. But the no cell phone thing was kind of neat. Although, you know, when you see storm clouds or something, you're thinking, oh, well, let me just check the weather, see what's going on this afternoon. Not a thing either. You know, you're literally just looking around and like, okay, maybe let me pack some stuff up. It may rain and, you know, we'll go do some other activity. But I don't know. I know you've, Stephen, wanted to do a lot of, like, you said the Inca Trail or something, or Colorado.
I've got some buddies that have done the Colorado Trail. I had a friend do the Appalachian, like, quit his job, did it for 6 months. And just to be able to go do that in nature is like, I don't know. If there's any backpackers that listen to the podcast or hitchhikers or whatever, I think it's super fascinating. I don't know. It was probably good to disconnect.
Yeah, that was really cool. Stephen, you texted this picture. Yeah, I'll share it on the screen as well. This was the last 50 feet carrying everything back up. I was exhausted, but you could just see it in there. I was burnt, exhausted.
What a stud, though. Oh, my God. Yeah, you look super ripped.
That's a good picture.
Thank you. It was a beautiful experience, really.
All right, back to the scheduled programming.
And that's why to do outbound. No, I'm kidding. So, wait, Andy, the two new hires, what roles are they for?
Both are quality control and finishing, because that's where we're hurting like the most right now is just some of the finishing work, you know, that pulls people away. Like last 2 weeks ago, we had to shut down all production here, like all production. And then everybody, yeah, for finishing, it was that intense. And so it's, we need help in the finishing area. So it's quality control.
Is that a, like a role that you people start on and tend to move around? Or is that, you, these are like, hey, I need you to focus on this for as long as we can.
Definitely an entry level spot, but you know, you learn so much at the end of the dryer that, like in 30 days you get a pay bump, you get certified. And then from there you have a really good idea of, you know, this type of person that you know, now works there, because are they capable of more? And so like, I always do that. And if I see somebody that I think I can promote, you know, quickly into something else and we have a role that's open, well then definitely.
What do you mean by certified?
I only do. So I have this little certification that we came up with. It's evolved over time. It's a written and oral quiz, basically, that just says, okay, yeah, I can do these. I think it's like a dozen things. And it's sort of, so like, when, you know, when they start, it's incentive to learn the position quickly. So not only do you learn it in 30 days, you then, once you are certified, it's like acknowledging, you know, and saying, hey, we appreciate you. You learned this quickly and you know how to do it. And then you get a pay boost.
What, like, I don't know, percentage wise, 20%, 10%, but like what?
It's about, what would it be? Maybe 10. No, it's more like 5%. It's a dollar. So,
and then you print this paper out on the first day or something, and so they see it to
it's a they know about it because it's in the job proposal. When I send them a job proposal, it says, you know, here's your starting pay and everything, and then in 30 days you get certified and this is your pay. And but the quiz is, yeah, they don't know the answers, they don't know the questions until the day of.
And it's interesting, you know, my first visit to ShirtCon was actually right before COVID shut down, literally. And it was crazy how seriously you guys take QC. Like, isn't there something where you need like 3 signatures on a shirt or something like that, Andy? Like, you guys take that, like, end of the dryer is like sacred, I feel like, at ShirtCon. You guys do something special.
Well, it used to be, you're right, 3 signatures. But when you were here, we changed it since. It seemed like it was a hassle.
Oh my God, I can't believe you guys do that. Everyone's like, yeah, why do we?
It's still really important. And so like what you're talking about is that, you know, I think most shops do this. And so at the end of the dryer, you send down a test print, right? And it's not the actual shirt. So it's the test print. And at that point we get the designer. And so the designer comes because they're the most familiar with the order and the art and everything, and they can spot something that's wrong. And so they look at the test print, and if everything looks good with the print, then they say, I'll take a final, and the final goes on the actual shirt. And then, you know, because you're looking for placement and other things. And if, you know, sometimes you do a test print, you try to do a test print on something that's similar in color, but sometimes you do a test print on a different color and then you see it on the actual shirt and it just looks different. And so, we try not to ruin shirts, the actual shirt, you know, and, so that's why we do the final. And when we do the final, it used to be like you're talking about, the press op, the press assist, and quality control, and the designer had to all sign off on it. But we don't do that anymore.
When's the last time you guys, knock on wood, when's the last time you guys botched one? Because I feel like you guys don't miss.
It happens. The last one we botched, actually, we goofed on. We were able to fix, because we printed the transfer. We were missing like a little bullet point or a little dot, you know, and we printed a transfer and then just heat applied. Got lucky. You know, sometimes you can save them like that.
Do you do anything unique when that first person starts on that first week? Because 2 people starting is, I mean, I guess it's good to batch people together. It definitely helps save time from redoing a bunch of stuff. But like, it's still a lot. Like I always had to block off my calendar for at least the first few days to make sure they got off on the right foot. Are you still doing that? Is someone else doing that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not involved in any sort of training like that.
Whose job is that?
That's going to go to, they're going to shadow somebody in QC. And then, but their manager is the production manager. The production manager manages the people on press and the people at the dryer. Really, one person starting brand new, fresh tomorrow, and the other person is going from part-time to full-time. It's easier than having 2 at once, I guess.
Yeah, starting 2 employees on the same day is like, it's cool. Really hard to do.
Yeah, it's very hard to do, but also... like when you, it makes me so happy.
Oh, when you can, well, I guess if it's an office job, maybe a little different, but like, I don't know. Oh, the yeah. First couple of days is so precious. Bruce, you've made a list of some questions for Andy.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you actually wrote this in, where you said, we're not built for comfort or pleasure. And I think this is related to a quote that you read. I'm not quite sure. Can you explain your thesis behind this?
Yeah, so I actually screenshotted this. I saw it on Instagram Reel, and I sent it to Steven, and I also sent it to you a while back because I thought it was really relevant to maybe our industry, but definitely what I was going through at the time. And I can read it really quick. So it goes like this. The theory is that most of our problems would disappear if we just found something hard to do and committed to it for a few months. We were not built for comfort or pleasure, and we know it. We're miserable because we lack purpose. We need a dragon to slay, an opponent to crush, a war to fight, and it doesn't matter what it is. Just pick something for, and like for me, and how this, I guess, oh yeah, there it is. For me, how this worked is that I was stuck. I was sort of stuck on, you know, I had gone through some things and I really wasn't coming into the shop. And so we had this like tidal wave of orders come in and I had to be here. And so I was coding screens, I was on press, and I was doing all this stuff. And after a few days of doing that in a row, and then all of a sudden a couple of weeks, it felt rewarding. I was accomplishing something. I was doing something. At the end of the day, I was physically and mentally tired. And it was, I guess, serendipity, because I didn't really say to myself, oh, you know, I need to get busy and I need to do this stuff. I'm stuck. It just happened for me. But then I saw this quote and it all sort of made sense. And I think it's important. I think it relates to a lot of people when they get sort of stuck in certain things. I don't know. What do you guys think about it?
So I want to like maybe break this down. If you're a shop owner listening to this, I feel like shop owners or business owners will wake up with a big to-do list, a long list of things to do, and they'll just like sometimes go through the motions, and another day will pass, and another day will pass, and another day will pass. I think in this instance, you're almost saying like going headfirst into something by like starting to pedal a little bit, you'll start to get pumped up about it. Like it'll change your mentality about things. Like you talked about being stuck. What do you think stuck is to the typical business owner? How would you describe it? And in your case might be different. In Bruce's case might be different in my case, but what does stuck mean for someone listening to this?
Well, for me, it was just, I was mentally stuck, and it was more about some personal things that were happening. And so, yeah, I was going through the motions and I had this shop, but I wasn't getting through as fast as I wanted to some of these things. And I wasn't sure why, you know? And so I was pulled in here into production, and all of a sudden I was like, hey, I really like this. This is where I started. I started in production. I didn't start, you know, as the boss, like typing on my keyboard, answering emails all day and solving or putting out fires or whatever. I was like printing t-shirts and or coding screens. And it's, like I'm at peace doing that sort of stuff. And I got busy doing those things. And they're very, like you said, you can actually highlight it off with a marker, or if you have a list of things to do, like, hey, I did that. You know, some of these things we work on, like bigger picture macro things about our business, it may take a week or a month to even finish that project, right? They're ongoing, they're complicated and all that. Well, if I'm coding 100 screens, I'm just coding 100 screens. I can do that in a couple hours and it's done. And I did that and you feel accomplished. And I just started doing that over and over. And I guess I just used the word stuck because that's how I felt. I became unstuck. And all of a sudden, everything made sense and it opened up for me. And that's why this Instagram reel came. I don't know, it just came along and it meant so much to me, because I guess it was just a dragon to slay. You know, I had to do these things and help out the shop, and I did that and it felt good.
And it doesn't matter what the dragon is, I think you're saying, like just picking something and doing something for a long period of time reinvigorates that feeling. Is that what you're kind of getting at?
I think so. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
I think there's this like just starting something and actually leaning into it for a long period of time. So like not like an hour or two, but being committed to something for a long period of time is reinvigorating, I think, when you're stuck. I wonder if sometimes doing lower menial tasks, like say you're stuck and just going back to the basics and starting to check boxes off again and like creating those lists and be like, okay, I got this done. Is that mentally better to get unstuck than trying to like solve a big problem? I don't know, Bruce, what do you think? We talk about like distraction of a business owner working on the right things. I think this is interesting.
I disagree with this quote a little bit, but I think that it depends on what you define stuck as, to your point. When I think about when I was stuck doing too much, and I was trying to solve that by doing more to sort of fight my way through it. It's like, you ever see those videos of people getting stuck in quicksand and they're like, this one popped up on my feed the other day. It was just stupid, you know, late night scrolling. It's like, okay, to get out of quicksand, you actually need to just lay back and do less and just like slowly like wiggle your torso and your feet. And then you eventually pop out of it. That was my version of being stuck. And so I was trying to fight through it by focusing and doing more. Now, I definitely feel like I could have argued the other way and said, well, you were focusing on the wrong thing for 6 months. You should have been focusing on like making one really good hire to take more stuff off the plate and just focus on, you know, not minutia tasks. But that's where maybe it's a, it depends type of feeling. I mean, Stephen, like yours, you know, through your journey, right, running Campus Inc. for what, 10-ish years or something. When you go back to thinking about being stuck, where do you think the solve was for you that helped turn a corner?
I'm torn between these two things because I would get stuck by doing too much crap that didn't matter and not enough stuff that did matter. But I think the quote of like, you always need a dragon to slay. I think about it like, if I wake up every morning, what are the three dragons that I'm going to slay? Like, what are those two? And maybe it's, I'm going to reclaim 100 screens. Maybe it's, I'm going to send out 100 invoices. Maybe it's, I'm going to zero in on, you know, whatever, collections, whatever it might be. But I think it's like being able to point out like, the dragon that I'm slaying this week is X. And I'm going to commit to doing that until it's done. The one thing that I think business owners are like mistakes they make is they try to slay too many dragons and they're never able to slay one. And so it's like,
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
How do you pick one or two? What are you going to say, Andy?
How do I put this? So I wonder if we're talking about slightly different things, because I really like your analogy about the quicksand, because, you know, if you, let's say you have anxiety and you are overthinking, whatever you're doing is over. You're overreacting, you're overthinking, you're overdoing, you're over slaying dragons. And your analogy is perfect, because if you're doing those things, you're actually creating more anxiety and making things worse. And so you have to figure out how to do less in that situation. But I think what I'm referring to, or maybe what this quote is, it's not my quote. I just thought that it correlated to what I was going through and it got me unstuck, is that I wasn't doing anything. Maybe that's just it. It's like, you know, I was at home and I was, you know, having a feeling sorry for myself and like, oh, isolating myself. And I wasn't interested. I didn't have passion. Like, I came in the shop and I was like, I don't care. You know, I don't care about this shop right now. I have this other stuff going on. This shop really doesn't matter. And then, you know, weeks passed by and months passed by and all of a sudden I had to be here, and that's what got me unstuck, is that I had these dragons to slay, and that worked for me in this instance. And so maybe they're two different things. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think it's the definition of stuck, which people come from different experiences for that, for sure.
There's a part of it that says you're miserable because you lack purpose. And I wonder if as an individual and a shop owner, so like I'm an individual first, I'm a human first, I'm a business owner second, I'm a boss, you know, whatever. It's like, what is your purpose? And it's like, could you write that down? Like, Andy, right now, what is your purpose at Shirt Kong? Could you actually put that into a sentence?
I think so. Yeah. Do you want me to?
Yes.
I would probably say my purpose right now at Shirt Kong is a mix of things, but most importantly is to, you know, be a leader and support my team and show appreciation for my team. Yeah.
And maybe it's just that. I wonder if like shop owners don't know, like, what is my purpose right now? I feel like it could be all over the place. Maybe your purpose is not sales related in production. Maybe it's morale. Maybe it's appreciation. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm glad we can disagree and still be friends.
I mean, I think it goes back to this, the 1% thing, like what we talk about with Fabric, which is like, do you get to spend out of all the hours in the month, at least 2 hours just thinking about in 1 year, what do I want this business to look like? And then what do I want my role to look like? Like, what do I physically want to be doing Monday through Friday? Because, I mean, the year blows by. Like, this year's half over, okay? And, you know, COVID, we kind of lost, like, the three-ish, four-ish years. not lost, but they went by extremely quickly. I feel like quicker than normal because of all the media and all the hype and hypersensitivity to that and the extra politics layer and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it would have been nice to do that. Anyway, okay. I saw this post online that I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on because I've made mistakes on both sides of the spectrum here. So Andy, with you know, your previous experience, the question really was around, do you try to promote internally for a role that you may need that's the next level up? And, or do you try to hire externally? And then the second part to that is, how do you know when someone has reached their limit? Because when I've promoted someone, so we had a team member on the customer success team, we needed sort of a lead customer success person. I did not want to be directly getting asked questions about, you know, what should I do to help retain this customer? What's the workflow problem with this? You know, support types of questions. I wanted this to go to the lead success manager first, and then any important ones come up to me. But when I promoted this person up, they were okay at their role. Now, there's two sides of the coin, right? Number one, they've never done this type of sort of lead responsibility before. And number two, like maybe they can learn it, but they're going to need 6 months or so. Right. And so I guess that's a long-winded way of like, how much runway do you try to give a person? How much coaching is it? And then when do you know if you got to make a game time decision and switch it up? I'm sure like as your shop has grown, you've encountered this a few times.
Part one, I always try to promote from within. I mean, it's super easy that way because you already know the person, you know, I'm confident when I give them that promotion that they're going to be successful at that new role. And maybe it is even that they've sort of cross-trained already and you've even had a chance to see them perform, you know, in that spot. And so a lot of times, like, let's say that it's a shipping and receiving manager. Well, the person that is going to go into that role nicely is the person that's the assistant there already. You know, they're very familiar with it and they can just move right in. Or if they're at quality control and they're doing really well, they already know all of the shirt styles and, you know, numbers and colors and all that kind of stuff. And so that's just really natural for them to go over and do that role. And in fact, a lot of times they're already cross-trained into it because let's say we get, you know, a tremendous amount of boxes that day, and we're only running two presses instead of three, and they can just jump over and help out in shipping and receiving. They just know the role already. And so promote from within is, I mean, you know, 90 whatever percent of the time is that's what we do.
What about a jump from press operator to production manager, which is probably the more common, like may work, may not work?
That's a good question. I think, you know, yeah, running a press is way different than managing people, right? You know, you sometimes think it's natural for them to go from running a press over to a production manager because they understand, you know, what it takes to, you know, the sense of urgency and to get jobs printed and out the door. They understand all of that. And that's one component of being a production manager is you have this schedule and you've got to keep to it. But the management of people is the harder part. And so how do you know if they're going to be good at that? And I think that, you know, you just have to go with your gut and, you know this person for a while and you know if they're a cheerleader and if they are good at, you know, supporting a team and being a leader. And so I usually would know that, I think. And that's why it's so great and beneficial to promote from within, especially in that role, you know, because if you bring somebody from the outside, yeah, I think there's going to be problems.
I think where I've gotten frustrated on this process is I almost have an expectation, maybe it's too high, but that they're able to run a lot sooner in that role than I had thought. For example, from the success manager to the lead success manager, it's like, okay, great. Now, like, can you create a strategy for, you know, our knowledge base of all this information so people can self-solve this? Can you think about retention? Like maybe what, you know, some sort of commission structure might be like these types of things. And they've never done it, which is, you know, expected, but they have trouble solving for that outcome as well. And that's where I'm like, oh my gosh, did I like prematurely promote this person into too high of a role, or should I have given them some smaller responsibilities first to get into that? Or is this just not the right like fit? Like after a month, and if I'm still having this difficulty, like have they just reached their limit for now and I need to find someone else?
Bruce, we were talking a couple of weeks ago on the phone about employee limits. Like when has an employee hit their limit? And when do you see, when can you find an employee's limits that still can like grow? What I'm getting at is you don't want to push an employee past their limit. If they've hit their sweet spot and they're cruising and maybe they're the best press operator, it might be wise not to promote them to a production manager because you know their limit and they know their limit. But then how do you know what capacity an employee has to grow beyond their limit, right? Like, oh, this employee still has a lot of room to grow or a lot of potential. I'm curious, Andy, from your standpoint, how do you communicate employees' limits, what they're capable of, like their long-term aspirations, goals, and get them comfortable in the role that they're in and maybe not moving past that if you don't think that's possible? Has that ever happened?
Wow. That's tough. I mean, I don't think you can always predict, you know, if they're going to be successful in that role. I've promoted somebody to manager of a department before and they quit 2 days later, you know, not just say, hey, I don't want to manage. I'm going to go back to what I was doing. I mean, just quit entirely.
Did they want a promotion? Or did they want the higher level as well? Or was it you kind of coaxing them into it?
And there was no coaxing. I just asked them. I said, here's what we're thinking. And I think you can, you know, you do it. I'm confident in your abilities and your, like when you go to a manager spot, I really like somebody who's stoic and, you know, you've witnessed them in situations before when there's a problem and they handle it, you know? I mean, it's easy when everything's going great, but when there's a problem and you see how they react and respond, well, then that's a good indicator, right? And so I put that person in a managerial role and they quit 2 days later. Like, you know, this is not for me. I don't want to have to deal with any of this. Here's my 2 weeks.
And I'm like, wow. Go back to the original role or no?
Could, but that they,
how hard is
that? They didn't want to.
Dude, that's the other side of the coin, right? Is that like, it's a risk for you because of that. Is like the if all the risks are like out there, that's like the final one, which is it doesn't work out. Now what, like we're 2-3 months in, or obviously that one was nice and clean, but you know, 2-3 months in, now what? Like, do you ask them to go back to that one? That's like very demoralizing. Do you have to bring someone else in? But then you've got this person who maybe you gave a raise to. Like, I don't know. Do you just test
once
it?
Once you promote, it's hard to undo.
No going
it.
Back. Yeah.
And so I think promoting from within obviously provides the least amount of friction, is the least, you know, is the most applicable path. But you also have to tread lightly. I would almost argue that if you take inventory of your entire team and you have people that are at their limits or aren't going to grow way past them, the hard thing to do is to hire above them. I had one of our production managers, incredible individual, has been with us for 4 years, and we're talking about the next stage of the business and what we're going to be doing in the future. And he kind of said to me, he goes, I love my job right now. I don't know if I'm the guy that's going to be able to do that. And he wanted me to confirm with him that I was feeling the same way. Because he's like, I don't think I have that. I like where I'm at right now and I'm doing a good job. I just wanted to be on the same page. And it was a lot of self-awareness. And I'm like, I got you. You are not that person. And he's like, I would be fine if we could hire someone above me that knew this a lot better than I did. I respected him a ton more for being able to say that. I don't know if employees, do you think more employees feel that and we just don't surface it?
I've had folks on both ends of the spectrum. One, some definitely want to continue being in their role and are like, no, like, this is great. You know, when we have conversations, like, what are you interested in? You know, it's been, you know, a few years, you're doing awesome here. Is there anything else you're interested in or want to continue growth wise? Right. Cause that's the other worry, is that some people definitely feel they're at a ceiling and you want to be able to raise that a bit. And then of course the flip side of it. So I guess I'm just trying to help create a path of the business going where it's going and aligning that with where their career progression is going. But I am definitely trying to minimize the risk of, you know, I guess it's up or out in a way where it's like...
Andy, how often do you have those big picture one-on-one conversations with employees where you're getting a, you know, are they aware, gut feels, are they happy? Do they want to grow? Do you have those regularly?
Just their annual performance review. Yeah, we probably should be doing it more often, but there's little check-ins, but as far as a big picture stuff, yeah. And that's one of the questions on my performance review. So I ask about, there's, you know, seven things that they're doing and seven things we're doing. And on there, it's like, how do you feel about the opportunity for growth here? And so sometimes, like you said, they're maxed out, you know, there's really nowhere else to go. And I think that at times they like that and they're fine with it and they're cool with it. But other times they're like, well, they circle, we get a bad grade there because like, where do I go now? You know, like I don't have, you know, a place or a spot. And, you know, that's tough, isn't it? And so I think in production, the way because of the company we are, which is different than a software company, I think, is that in production, you know, I mean, that's what we do. There is a max in a way. I mean, where do you go from, like, if you're a great press operator and we already have a production manager, what's the next spot? You know, I don't know. I don't think there is one.
Do you think it's a generational problem where a younger generation wants to take on more and take over the world, which a more mature generation is like more comfortable in their role and is like, I'm happy to have a job. I'm going to do a great job at it. And I could work here for 10 years and that's totally fine.
You're not comparing like Gen X to millennials and stuff like that, right? You're just saying an age, whatever age you are.
Yeah. Like, so for instance, we have an inventory manager and it's kind of like her, I wouldn't call it retirement job, but later in life and is like comfortable just being awesome at that and doesn't necessarily care to do anything beyond that, but does a great job at it. And like one of my favorite employees, because there's no future expectations, like, it's just great. I don't know. Those are like sweet
the quality
spot
of life thing, you know, like, hey, I'm happy. Like when I'm in the screen room coding screens, I'm like, you know, I could do this, just this, you know, because you come in and you have these, you get to code screens. It's beautiful. It's part of the process. It's fun. And you go home and that's pretty stress-free, isn't it? And
Andy, if you're spending hours cleaning screens, that is a thing of the past with Easy Way Screen. Okay, sorry, I'll do it. So time spent. So speaking of cleaning screens, how do you know where you should be spending majority of the time and where are you spending the majority of the time? So are those things aligned or are they inversed?
I think as a small business owner, they're usually not aligned, you know, because you have this, you know what you should be doing, but then somebody isn't there or this job has to go out or whatever happens, something happens and then you get pulled into doing something else. It's a surprise. And I think that, you know, I think the answer to that is different. So when we were a startup phase, I would say that I had all kinds of energy. We weren't very automated and it was a grind, right? Like I just came in here and maybe I was on press or maybe I was cleaning screens. Maybe I was up in customer service. I was doing all sorts of different stuff working in the business. And then you grow and you all of a sudden start managing people and you have people in place to do some of those things. You start automating and you just work on different stuff. And so I think that's just a natural evolution, isn't it? But then here I am now and it's by choice, I should say, by choice, a mixture, because I really like being in production. I think it's healthy for me right now, where I'm at right now. I like going and touching a t-shirt and touching a screen and maybe mixing some ink or something like that, because, you know, I lost some of the passion that I had for this business because I got stuck doing all sorts of other stuff, which I like, and I took on different roles and that's fine. But then all of a sudden I missed being printing shirts. And so I think for me personally, it's a mixture.
I would almost ask the question of you know, how do you know where best to spend your time as what gives you joy?
You think so? Like, are they aligned, or is it like a Venn diagram thing where it's like, I enjoy this, but the business needs this, and I'm trying to find the overlap?
So maybe it's how should you spend your time? How do you spend your time? And how do you want to spend your time? Because right now, like Andy, you're like, it's invigorating for me to be back there. Right. And you guys don't have a sales problem, right? Like the business is kind of running. And so you're kind of playing almost is what it feels like. Like you are choosing to be back there for your own joy and pleasure.
He's in peak business ownership.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. It's the two factors. A, the business churns off enough profit so that, you know, you feel financially secure. And B, you can spend your time how you'd like to spend your time.
I think that's important. I think that we need to recognize that. And it's not just, maybe it could be, it could have been earlier for me, you know? So like, what do you really want? When I was younger, I was like, oh, we're going to take over the world. Sort of that attitude, right? We're going to be big, and bigger is better. But then we got bigger and it wasn't necessarily better. And I realized what I wanted, and I wanted some sort of balance, and I had enough. Like I had a car, and I had a home to go to, and I could have a turkey sandwich at the end of the day. And that was enough, you know, for me. But everybody's enough, I guess, is different. And so I didn't mind doing all the overtime. I didn't mind working the way I was, and I didn't mind the grind. I loved it. I loved what I was doing. But at some point, I hit burnout, and I was like, wait, I don't love this as much anymore. So I think it changes over time.
We've talked to a lot of shops where they have that turning point of, I wanted more, I wanted more, I wanted more growth, I wanted more revenue, and so on. I wanted more people and presses and space and so on. And then usually there's some sort of emotional turn. I mean, some folks we've had on, you know, at home, it was just a disaster because I just wasn't at home. I spent so much time at work. I wasn't present at all, and so on. A health related thing. I had this big health issue. I physically couldn't be there anymore. And that changed it to figuring out, like, when you talk about what Shirkunk's sweet spot was, like, what was the business like when you started to hit that turning point? What was it, you know, is it way more people? How many people? Like, what did it look like?
I guess the turning point was for me, like you mentioned, it was a perfect storm of things. It was health and personal life, relationships. Yeah. So, I mean, I had a lot happen at once, and that's what changed my direction, you know, for me. It did, because it was hard. It was very hard not to keep the, you know, your foot on the gas, because you think you feel responsible, right? You have a team now, and you are in this growth pattern for many reasons, because the shop becomes its own life. It's its own entity, you know, and you do things not just for yourself anymore, but for the good of the shop. And so, you know, it's hard to take your foot off the gas. And I think you feel morally responsible to keep pushing. And so it's a dilemma. It's a difficult spot.
Do you think you could have let off the gas or find your sweet spot sooner if you didn't go through that? Like, in other words, do you have to go through the, like, pedal to the metal, you know, we want to grow, and then know that, oh shoot, I swung way past where I want to be? Or is it possible to start, like, if you were to advise a shop that was a year, 2 years in, you know, could you tell them, okay, look for these financial metrics maybe, or look for this revenue per employee metric, or something that gives you a sense of, okay, we're at a better spot. Let's start to slow up a little bit. We don't need to, like, I don't need to put in so much time.
You know, for me, I think it took, you know, things happening in my personal life and stuff. I don't think there's a metric. I think for everyone, it's different. You know, what's your definition of success? You know, we decided we wanted to be, I guess maybe selfishly, I decided I wanted to be a very good small company. And that was what was going to make me happy. And that was enough. And it took a while to figure that out. I mean, we had so many expansions, and at some point I was like, okay, that's enough. Does that make sense? I don't know,
Steven, if you're coaching a smaller shop, can you, are you able to point that out sooner now that you've, I mean, you've worked with so many shops through consulting or just through this, or, you know, being at the, in the industry for a while, like, are you able to spot that out as well for earlier to see the patterns?
I think there's some revenue markers. It's like shops that can do between $500,000 and $1 million with 3 to 4 employees can make a decent amount of money. And then they try to go to this next level. That's like the $1.5 million range. And so they start hiring and hiring and investing and buying nicer equipment and buying new machines. And then they kind of get in over their skis. And then they're like, oh shit, I have to keep pedaling down to get to this next threshold. And so I think to be able to design your business and actually like envision it, you know, I want to make like to reverse engineer. I wish if I could go back in time and reverse engineer my business and say like, this is my sweet spot, it would probably save a lot of sleepless nights of how did I get here and what is this mess that I'm dealing with now?
It's just interesting. I mean, do you think that's right, Andy? Like if you were to go back to those days, revenue wise for sure, Kong, was that those good times? Like, was that the time to slow down or no?
I think that we made it over the hump and now it's easier, you know, than it was. So I think maybe there's this limbo land, you know, Stephen was talking about metrics, you know, dollar wise, I think maybe there's a limbo land, like, sure, if you're below 1.5 or something, then it's this this much work. And all of a sudden you take on more equipment, more people, more machines, and all, it's too much, but then you pass that even, and then it gets back to kind of the feel like it was before. And that's because I have, I think one of the key roles that we added, that I added was operations manager, you know, somebody to help do a lot of the stuff that I do. And without that person, you know, it would, my life would be so different. I don't know. There's hardly any other way to say that. That person has been here for almost 10 years, you know, so they knew the shop, they knew how things run. They know me and my style, and they've been around that for so long. And then all of a sudden I was like, hey, what do you think about helping me do this? And it worked, you know? And so maybe that's what it is that, yeah, you could probably define that if you look back and say, where is it? And you have to decide if you want to go through those years of struggle or just keep it small. There's nothing wrong with, you know, keeping it at a small size. There's something really great about that too.
There's nothing wrong with a small, healthy, profitable company.
Say it again.
There is nothing wrong with a small, healthy, and profitable company. And so if it's, you know, if at $800,000 a year, you can pay yourself well and you can make good money and you're not burning yourself out, you don't have to go to 1.3 or 1.4 million. It's okay to just run a small, healthy business. It's almost like barbers. Barbers fascinate me because they know their limit. They know this is how many heads of hair I can cut. They don't care to own the barbershop. And they're like, I can cut 40 heads of hair a week. And this is how much money I can make, 40, 50 bucks a head. And that's it. And they're happy. And I think as small business owners, we're always like chasing what's next. And this is never enough. And if only I get to this, we'll be fine. And I think that attitude has to start to change of what will make me comfortable and happy to cruise for a long time. Right.
Okay. Part two of this episode is when we're going to have to get into the rest of these questions because we've got a handful more, but we went a lot deeper than I thought, which is awesome though. And we always love being able to talk with you, Andy, about all this good stuff. So first off, Andy Rudman, Sure Kong, you can follow Andy Rudman's journey on Instagram as well. You always have some amazing posts, which you got to share those more. I really like the long form. Maybe because I like the like Substacky blog post stuff again, but
can you slay that dragon for us, Andy? Post on Shirt Kong more.
I will try, and you know, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. It's so fun to talk shop, and I do miss that. If I can, I would love to shout out to everyone who has messaged me, called me, written me handwritten letters that arrive here by the mail, by the actual mail. That are like that care and that have checked in and said, hey, are you okay? And it means a lot to me and I appreciate it warms my heart. And thanks for having me on. This has been fun.
And I think what's really cool, Andy, is like we did an episode maybe a month ago, and obviously it's like one of the most viewed episodes already because your name's on it. But when you are, I think what's so special about you is you're open, you're vulnerable, and a lot of listeners connect with you there and deeply feel some of the things that you've gone through. And we appreciate you doing that so much so that we couldn't even get through half our list and we have to do a part two of this. So this is good. We need to do this again.
All right, Pronouncers, we'll see you for part two. Thanks so much for joining in on this week's episode of the Pronouncers Podcast. Have a good one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.